Belcher.
Welcome to the Village Oak Tree for October 23rd. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I thank you again for spending a little time with me this week. So I have some more news stories to shake things up again, and an essay on American politics that I found on Medium.com. It sums up the current upcoming election and candidates from the perspective of an outsider, which is how I feel about all this nonsense. I feel like an outsider in the country I live in these days. To wrap things up, I have another chapter from The Priest to read to you. More of Michael Campy's dystopian future story about what the collapse of the United States would look like from a first person's perspective. So let's talk about news stories that I've dug up in the last week. The first one I picked up was from RT News, which you will be hearing me reference a lot of stories from RT from now on due to the U.S. censorship issues. This one is about how Ukraine wants the ability to create nuclear weapons. Now, I don't know about all of you, but I seriously think this would be a bad idea to let Zelensky and company have access to nuclear weapons to attack Russia. The saner heads in the world don't want them to have any conventional long-range weapons to hit Russia with, much less nuclear ones. No one wants a nuclear war with anyone. That much is agreed upon by everyone, even the United States. Zelensky's victory plan was received in the West with mixed reviews. The U.S. didn't buy it, and certain EU countries didn't either, but others did, and are pushing for more support for Ukraine, France being one of them. I have to wonder why, though. They are the farthest away outside of the UK and the US from the Russian front. So why are they being so diehard about Ukraine winning? What are they afraid of? In other military news, I found this story about a US defense contractor that has been fined for bribing foreign officials and overcharging the American government for services and products. Raytheon, one of the U.S.'s largest defense contractors, has been found guilty of the things that any of us who have been part of the military-industrial complex in the past or present have known about for decades. The majority of the U.S. defense contractors have been stealing and bribing governments for 70 years or more. Seems that Raytheon got caught being a little bit too blatant about it and had to be spanked. Now they will fall back in line with all the other grifters who continue to steal from the American taxpayers and anybody else they can get money from. I could tell you a lot of stories dating back to through my decades of military service about how badly U.S. defense contractors overcharge the Pentagon for all kinds of things. From little things like toilet paper to big things like advanced weapon systems that don't work, cost overruns, and so on. Does anyone remember the funny stories from the Reagan days about the $40 hammers and so much else? How about the lost billions spent on reconstruction projects in Afghanistan and Iraq when George W. Bush was president? This business with Raytheon is just one that slipped out from underneath the blanket of clandestine defense budget spending, and it'll return to the shadowy places that defense spending operates in once again. In other news, I found an obscure story about oil corporation Phillips 66 shutting down oil refineries in Los Angeles. Now, ordinarily, this wouldn't be big news, but as this story talks about, it's a part of an overall picture of the fossil fuel industry picking up and leaving California altogether lately. They cite that they aren't making enough money to keep the refineries and other facilities open anymore. California has gone big on renewable energy sources, and that's a good thing for the environment. But California doesn't create enough energy from those resources to replace fossil fuels yet. Meanwhile, the fossil fuel companies closing up shop, that means that consumers in California will have to pay even more for gasoline and oil because more will have to be shipped in. California already has some of the highest prices at the pumps for gasoline now. And the U.S. wants to block all imports of EV cars to the U.S. in order to give the U.S. and U.S. car manufacturers a better chance to invent their own EVs. We've seen how Tesla's fared in the last few years with high prices and lots of recalls. I've been reading stories about the failures in Detroit so far, and it doesn't look good for the American consumers who want an affordable EV car anytime soon. Meanwhile, China is selling their cheap EVs all over the world. Well, trying to anyway. There's some places that are kind of saying, hey, you know, a little bit too much too soon. But still, the Americans want to shut them all off. How many listeners know about this story about the top secret documents that were leaked last Friday detailing the Israeli-Iran attack plans? I won't dwell on this too much other than to say that there will be more about this as the FBI is investigating the leak. Is it a disgruntled federal employee? Is it an intentional leak to make Israel pause the attack? There's going to be more to come, I'm sure. And actually, there has been a little bit more here in the last 24 hours. You know, Israel has kind of paused just a bit. You know, the Americans are trying to convince them not to go at all. But, you know, it's getting complicated. Then there are the stories about the cleanup from the recent hurricanes in the U.S. Those stories have slowed down some, but I found this one from RT News about a very controversial Republican lawmaker from the state of Georgia, with part of her district hard hit by Hurricane Helene, giving a speech about how the U.S. government sent all that money overseas to help the Ukrainians and didn't have enough to care for its own people after the storm. Marjorie Taylor Greene, someone whom I've always thought of as the real-life epitome of dumb blonde jokes, actually said something for once that I agree with. The United States is famous for throwing trillions, with a T, of dollars to fund wars and reconstruction projects overseas in countries they decimated, and this is no different. The U.S. has wasted billions of dollars in Ukraine to push NATO military expansionism right up to the Western Russian border. Every president since Slick Willie Clinton in the 1990s has lied to the Russians and the world and fomented coups and Western expansion in Ukraine since 2014, all the while leading Ukraine along with promises of entry into NATO and the EU. Mind you, I said promises because, as most people know, the U.S. doesn't keep its promises very much. Then they take what they want from whoever they want, whenever they can, and leave the victims with nothing, next to nothing in return. And Ukraine's going to be another victim of that. Ukraine has something the U.S. wants, though. And if the EU and the UK play nice, they may get a share of it. Senator Lindsey Graham said it right out in the open a few months ago on a news interview. Ukraine has vast mineral wealth that the U.S. and the West want very badly. And Ukraine needs to win this war in order for the West to take advantage of all that wealth underground. An American equity company is already primed and ready to invest slash pillage in Ukraine's mineral wealth as soon as the war is over and Ukrainian government can finalize the contracts, which, as corrupt as Ukraine's government is, you know that BlackRock gets in there and starts investing all this money. There's only going to be a handful of Ukrainians that are going to benefit from this, but the public, you know, the general John Q. Ukrainian public over there, yeah, they're going to be the big losers. It goes without saying that if Russia wins the war, they will have access to some of that mineral wealth and a lot more. And the Americans can't afford that. Not only in the lost financial revenues for the U.S. government political donors, but in the loss of political prestige around the world if Ukraine folds under Russian pressure and has to capitulate in a peace agreement, which may be coming very soon. There's a lot of talk going on right now here in this last week or so that Kiev may be trying to set something up for a ceasefire. Since we're talking about the U.S. wars overseas now, let's talk about the Middle East. I found a couple of standout stories regarding the war in Palestine. My first one is about the real reason why Israel wants to ethnically cleanse Gaza and the West Bank. The story from the cradle follows in the wake of other stories that have been published since last October. That Israel has an ulterior motive for clearing out all the Palestinians and Arabs from Palestine. Many of us wrote last fall about how Israel wants access to all the oil in Gaza, and it's underneath northern Gaza. There are a lot of oil reserves and off the coast as well. And they don't want to share it with anyone, especially the Palestinians. Israel also wants Gaza so they can turn part of it into a large canal to facilitate the movement of trade goods from Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern countries to Europe. The Ben-Gurion Canal would shave off transportation costs and bring a lot of revenue to Israel, much like the Suez does for Egypt now. So imagine, the Israelis built this Ben-Gurion Canal right where the Netzarim corridor is about now, or pretty much most of northern Gaza. Then they would be cutting out Egypt's Suez Canal a lot, which they probably are all about that. And, you know, it's all about the money. But, you know, they're a long way from doing that. Before the war started last October, there were a lot of Jewish Americans buying up illegal land in the West Bank and building American-style suburban houses out there on these illegally acquired plots and subdivisions. Now, they're all leaving as fast as they can because of the war. Thousands of dual citizenship Jews have fled the country, leaving huge gaps in the Israeli economy. Then there's all that waterfront property that the developers and the settlers want for themselves. They want to turn the beach areas of Gaza into tourist areas and offer up more land for Israeli settlers. Same thing for the West Bank. Expand the settler areas as far as they can, eliminate all the Palestinians and Arabs. Now, you got to understand this, that the biggest stories that are coming out right now about this is how the Zionists want to turn the greater Israel into the biblical lands that their God gave them, which means part of Syria, all the way up into Turkey, and all of Gaza, West Bank, and Lebanon. They want to take over Jordan and part of Egypt, the Sinai part of Egypt. This, according to these Zionists, is a historical lands given to them by their God, and they want it all. So that's going to be interesting. According to this story that I picked up, the Israeli developers were already lining up to move into North Gaza. All they're waiting for is the IDF to finish clearing out all the Palestinians. So again, they're doing boat tours off the coast of northern Gaza, and they've got developers that are setting up sales shacks on the border. They're just waiting for the IDF to finish everything up so they can move in and start building hotels. Which leads into my other story from Israel. Another story from the cradle. This one is about how Israel is getting ready to set up concentration camps in northern Gaza using ex-CIA and ex-military special forces people to manage and run the camps. The camps are the latest idea from Israel to force what's left of the Palestinians out and into the camps, where the only way in and out will be by using biometrics to track their whereabouts. How is this not another war crime to add to Israel's tally? Didn't the world outlaw concentration camps after World War II? This is just another flagrant up yours world attempt to complete the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. Israel is betting hard that no one will dare to do anything to stop them, especially since the United States stands behind them with a threatening demeanor, telling the world that Israel can do as it pleases to defend itself, no matter the crimes against humanity. To bring things back to the U.S., as promised, I have an essay on the state of the U.S. elections and the candidates from a Medium writer. This essay stood out from all the rest that I'm inundated with all the time now. I firmly believe that Kamala Harris needs to do something dramatic with regard to funding the wars overseas in order to win this election with any kind of margin. She needs to stand up and be counted to show the American people that she cares more about them than the Israelis, Palestinians, Lebanese, and Ukrainians. So far, most of her rhetoric is going on a lot of deaf ears. She'll always have her core of diehard Democratic Party voters, but she's losing hundreds of thousands of Muslims and other independent voters over the funding of the wars. Donald Trump could very well pull this one out of the hat if the pollsters are anywhere near close to their predictions, which, again, you know, they flip-flop back and forth almost every day. Because the U.S. uses this out-of-date electoral college system to tally the final votes, it could go to Trump, despite his ramblings and buffoonery, just because a lot of people are fed up with the current administration who isn't paying attention to them and their needs. Not that Donald Trump will be any better, but he says he will, and that is what's swaying a lot of people. Which brings me to my last point of the day, societal corruption. The United States is by and large a very corrupt society from the top down to the bottom. Corruption infects every aspect of their society, from the White House to the local city administrators and police forces countrywide. What brought on my wish to say all this was my wife, actually. We were watching a couple of episodes from one of her favorite Netflix shows, The Lincoln Lawyer, season 3 last night. In this season, the main character is fighting against some corrupt police, both federal and city, from the city of Los Angeles. My wife started asking me about this, and I explained to her that although this is a fictional show, it is based on real life in the U.S. There are corrupt politicians and police all over the country. There have been some very high-profile police corruption cases in the news in the last couple of years, such as the Tyre Nichols killing in September of 2023 in Memphis, Tennessee. The reporting of the New Orleans police in Louisiana torturing people for years, and other human rights issues, and so many others through the years. And this is going on in today's society right now. There's a lot of this going on every which way but loose. I realize that this is not unique to the U.S. A lot of other countries are full of rampant corruption and police brutality as well. I pick on the U.S. today because my wife is an immigrant from a repressive, corrupt country, and she was granted asylum in the U.S. because of those repressive policies. For her to pick up on the corruption and bad police in the show and ask me about it, and my explanation that this is reflective of American society, says a lot. After I explained everything to her, she commented that the U.S. doesn't appear to be much better than the country she immigrated from anymore. That from an immigrant woman who came to America to get away from all that, only to realize that she only traded one version of corruption and police brutality for another. The U.S. elections are less than 2 weeks away, and neither of the two main parties' candidates are offering up any plans to address any of this corruption. If anything, they'll be perpetuating it with business-as-usual kind of policies. The only difference between the two is the Democrats are using glitter and distraction to convince people to vote for them, whereas Trump and the MAGA party are not hiding anything. They're right up front with their corruption and plans for more authoritarian brutality. To paraphrase my immigrant wife, and so many other immigrants who came from countries with brutal regimes, how is the United States any different from Russia, China, Israel, North Korea, and so many other authoritarian countries? The so-called democratic ideals that the U.S. throws up to everyone around the world to aspire to is a lie. It's very obvious now with their unlimited support for the genocidal Israelis and the fascist Ukrainian government, and their economic and the U.S.'s economic sanctions against governments, companies, and people around the world who won't do their bidding. So let's take a short break. And when I return, I'll read this essay to you that I mentioned, and you can decide for yourself. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and tell you about my book. Podcast is free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Crown of Biha, for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Crown of Biha, the Tree of Life, at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I've set up a donations tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and on my website at www.crownofbiha.com. Link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Now let me tell you about my book. It's entitled The Fugitives in a New United States, which can be found at major online book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu, and many others. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and digital ebook form. You can also buy a hardcover or a paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page on my website. This is a fictional story about what the United States might look like by 2031 under an authoritarian religious government. It's full of drama, action, and romance, but I wrote it for young adults and older, so it's safe. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite online book retailer, and I hope you enjoy it. I appreciate your time and support, no matter how you choose to do so. And I thank you very much for taking the time out for me. All right, so welcome back. Now, the name of this article is Dem Supporters Need to Accept Why Harris is Faring So Poorly Against Trump by Christopher Nigro, and his name is spelled N-I-G-R-O. So I want to mention here that he publishes on his own site at Lightning Press and also on Substack. So I invite you to go find him on those. And now let me read this article to you. It's a bit lengthy, but it details pretty much everything that's going on. So he says, this is my most recent post that saw its first incarnation as a response to a Dem supporter and columnist on media. That particular Democrat, like many, is acting as if it's baffling as to why Harris is running neck and neck with the likes of Donald Trump on the polls so frighteningly close to Election Day on November 5th, 2024. But it's not baffling to anyone who's not under the Democratic Party's manipulative spell. It's the exact same reason that this happened in 2016 when Trump beat awful corporate shill Hillary Clinton. And in 2020, when Trump almost beat awful corporate shill Joe Biden. And why it's even more pronounced in 2024 after 4 years of a Dem administration. So I will answer these Dem supporters' questions here as to why things are getting worse for the Democrats when you look at the polls. And why the Dems are gaining an unprecedented amount of opposition from third-party candidates in addition to Trump and the Republicans. The more specific question is this. Why is a buffoonish reality TV host with a bad attitude, who is hated by many, including numerous pundits in his own party, giving the Dems such a hard time in the polls for a third election cycle in a row? Why aren't they mopping the floor with this dude in terms of working class support? And what can the Dems do to offset this type of debacle in the future? Note to all strict partisan Dem supporters, tell the Dems in office to do the following six things. I know you won't do that, and they wouldn't listen if you did, because they do not think they owe you anything in exchange for your support, except keeping the orange guy out of office. But if you did hold their face to the fire and they were inclined to listen, this is what they would need to do. One, give the working class the policies we want, and do it immediately, not eventually. Make our lives better under your watch by a considerable margin than it is under any Republican administration. Give us universal health care, cancel all medical debt, and get the medical industry out of the profit system. Give us shelter, utilities, and at least a significant amount of food as human rights. Stop commodifying these material necessities. Cancel all student debt immediately. Give us free college and give us useful degrees for learning and contributing to society rather than identity-based departments like critical race studies and women's, nowadays, gender studies that yield angry activists encouraging hatred for others more than anything else and which cannot be translated into any type of job that is useful to all society. Let them start their own off-campus study groups for that type of education if they want it. Give us meaningful job guarantees with a good wage. Give us increasing amounts of UBI to compensate for advancing in automation and any increase in the cost of living while capitalism still exists. Now, let me ask each of you two things. One, if Harris does win, and it's very touch and go, she does at this point, as of late October 2024, what do you think is going to happen if our lives get substantially worse economically under 48 years of a Democratic administration than it was under a previous Republican administration and following 4 years of a prior Democratic administration? Because that has been the trend. Doesn't mean the Republicans are a better choice, but it does demonstrate that they aren't a worse one. Think about the implication of that as more and more workers are driven away from supporting the Democrats. Two, what if we soon have an entire world of people horrified by rapidly increasing wars that suck up trillions of dollars that are not going to help desperate people in dire economic need? Think about how many more think about how more terrifying this will be than electing Trump or whichever Republican boogeyman follows him out once he's out of the picture. Stop with the censorship while claiming you stand for freedom and democracy. You can't just talk about that. You have to actually be about it. Stop banning honest opinions against Dems' talking points on social media by labeling it disinformation and selecting a combination of big tech capitalists and bureaucrats to decide what that is. Social media, where many millions of people come to get their news and discuss issues openly and honestly, needs to be nationalized, not under the control of any political party, and not under the control of private capitalists who own the forum and use it primarily for profit, e.g. advertisements and pay-to-play special features, along with capitalist propaganda favoring the talking points of whichever wing of the duopoly it currently happens to be in bed with, or the preferences of a maverick capitalist, e.g. Elon Musk. Please tell your fellow Democrat supporters that, as well as those eggheads you insist should be running the government, the following: the Dems have no right to claim they stand for civil liberties or that they are better on that than the Republicans if they support banning TikTok, campus protests, or social media posts and vids that criticize Democrat talking points. And if they openly consider freedom of speech to be problematic, like Hillary Clinton recently said, we are going to find them problematic. Stop the war. Number three, stop the war profiteering. Stop funding genocides and wars all over the world. Stop provoking war with multiple nations instead of sitting at the table and discussing amicable solutions to problems. That includes a willingness to replace rapacious competition typical of capitalism with cooperative ventures where everyone gains something from it, not just one party at the expense of another. And by everyone, I mean workers in all nations. Stop sending billions and billions to fund these violent catastrophes that are endangering everyone on the planet and slaughtering thousands of innocents instead of spending that money to help the American working class economically. Build bridges with others in the world, despite our differences in culture or way of doing things, by helping workers in other nations rather than exploiting them. Give all the trillions we would save in the long run to FEMA to help victims of natural disasters and funding all the social programs that the working class needs. Stop claiming every single foreign leader our government disagrees with or has economic rivalries with is the new Hitler to rationalize such extreme behavior against the nation's people, especially when we're funding maniacs like Netanyahu, who acts more like Hitler than the current leaders of Russia, South Korea, or China. Stop exaggerating the motives of said foreign leaders to claim they are intending to conquer the world when all they actually want is for the U.S. and its close allies to get the fuck out of their affairs and stop trying to achieve economic dominance everywhere. We already know that the U.S. motives for interference has nothing to do with establishing democracy and everything to do with economic imperialism. Most importantly, if you're that terrified of a new Hitler emerging, stop doing the exact things that would cause this to happen, let alone fund or support lunatic dictators that behave more like him than anyone our government actually brands as enemies. Keep in mind that this was the awful economic hardships imposed on post-World War I Germany by the triumphant Allies that led to the Nazi Party coming to power in the first place. Stop sending weapons to other nations to fight proxy wars for us so that their own soldiers are sent into futile, highly destructive battles that will devastate their society for potentially many generations. Stop trying to label such individual heroes or freedom fighters instead of what they actually are: victims, pawns, and cannon fodder. Stop antagonizing nations armed with nuclear weapons and pushing them into corners. Showing them the worst of us is only going to bring out the worst in them. Stop listening to Dems who tell us what we need to cease considering the presence of nuclear weapons in the world when going after our enemies, or that it's a sign of cowardice or capitulation to do so. And for God's sake, lose your damn bloodlust for armed warfare. Stop insisting that America should cluster bomb the fuck out of cities and foreign countries we consider to be our enemies, instead of sitting at the table and working out a cooperative deal, or cheering it on like you're watching a Rambo film whose fictitious plot is clearly defined good guys and bad guys. If you get thrills or hard-ons off the idea of war and conquest, play video games like Call of Duty or board games like Strategio to get that out of your system, not cheer your government on when it does such things in real life. If war in the real world makes you feel good, no matter who is winning, then you should engage in a large amount of self-examination. I mean, do you seriously have any idea or concern how brutal war actually is and what type of behavior it brings out soldiers, world leaders, and working class supporters of their governments via misplaced patriotism? War should never be used as a means to resolve problems between nations, except in most dire circumstances, and fighting over money and resources does not count. BTW, putting gay pride and BLM flags on drones or emblems of such on uniforms as soldiers changes nothing. Are we really honoring the Black and LGBT communities or giving them positive publicity by advertising how welcome they are these days to participate in such atrocities? Do you seriously think this makes the military a progressive institution worthy of support from the left? Number four, stop supporting horrible corporate candidates like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Please, finally accept the following. Working class people at large do not care about breaking a glass ceiling or inserting DEI policies in the entertainment industry or the personality of a candidate or vibes or party brand or fear-mongering about the Republicans, nor is having multimillionaire celebrities fawn over in a doorstep going to get workers to care. They want results on an economic level first and foremost. They want a peaceful world order where everyone benefits. If the Democrats repeatedly fail to deliver on that, and things keep getting worse for the working class under their administrations rather than better, they're going to lose support. They will lose it to the other wing of the capitalist duopoly, to upstart independents and third parties like the Greens. That is just common sense. Expecting and demanding otherwise is just tribalism at its most irrational extreme. Five, stop insulting working class activists and union members et al. Who want to see results by calling them Russian bots or trolls. Stop demanding that people on the left vote for the Democrats as if this is some sacred obligation expected of everyone, and acting as if everyone on the left must make defeating Trump their top priority. You do not make our priorities. We make our own depending on what we see as most important to improving our lives. You do not tell us who to vote for. We decide that based on our honest opinion of who deserves it the most. You or the Democrats do not own our vote. We do. You do not make demands of us. We make demands of the Democrats or any other political party if they want our votes. Understand and accept the fact that the agenda of the Democrats is not necessarily, in these days rarely is, the agenda of the working class or the left as a whole. We make our agenda based on our collective needs. The Democrats in office do not. They don't own the working class, and their obligation is to help us prosper, not the other way around. Do you seriously have to be paid by the Russian government to want to see improvement for the working class in America, let alone all over the globe? Is it truly serving Russian interests alone to stop cluster bombing the living shit out of other countries, let alone funding a genocide that has reduced Gaza to a smoldering wasteland of ruined buildings and starving refugees? And does trying to hold the Democrats accountable for their actions and expect something substantive from them in exchange for our votes, support, and campaign donations truly constitute trollish behavior, or is it simply justifiable demands on them to give if they want to get? Six, stop with the Trump derangement syndrome already. Look how little it's gotten you. The lives of the working class got worse under Biden than it did under Trump, economically speaking. The immigration crisis soared. Prices on just about everything soared. Divisive identity politics in place of cohesive economic policies soared. And war all across the world soared. The fact that a handful of you liberal elites are doing well does not mean the vast majority of us are, and we are not going to pretend otherwise for you. Doing so benefits your party at our expense. Our first priority is the economic well-being of everyone in our class, not keeping Trump out of office or breaking the glass ceiling, yada, 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 to serve your personal agendas that are based on emotion. This is especially the case when the support Jill Stein is receiving proves that a woman can indeed become president and break that ceiling if they have a strong pro-working class and anti-war policy platform. Trying to guilt and shame us into voting for a candidate with next to nothing for us on their plank because she is a woman is not working. If said candidate's track record is horrible, and she was imposed upon us by powerful capitalists with no votes from the working class, then she is likely going to lose. That should have been a no-brainer for you. This is why so many people in the working class do not give a hula-humping fuck if it's Trump or Harris who wins. It's not supporting Trump to want leaders that actually deliver and demand that they do so in exchange for our support. It's not about personality or brand loyalty or arbitrary identity status in the end. It's about results. If you keep insulting us and scoffing at our very reasonable demands with this irrational fear-mongering over Trump being the next Hitler and Russia allegedly controlling everyone who is against the Democrats, then you're only going to drive more and more of us away and incite further opposition from the working class. The less sane and rational you sound, the less the average person wants to be associated with your brand. Lastly, understand this, which I will make as clear as newly cleaned window paint. We do not owe any party or any single politician our votes. They owe us something if they want our support. It's that simple. This is reality, and you need to accept it if you want to win. On my end, I encourage workers to go past post-duopoly and support a third pro-working class party to challenge plutocratic rule itself. It's not more pragmatic to vote for a capitalist party that repeatedly lets us down and makes our lives worse, let alone funds a genocide and brings us to the brink of World War III. Remember the old saying that tells us if something is bad or untenable, then sooner or later, something's got to give. Well, the polls that have Dem supporters so concerned and desperate are proving that something is now finally starting to give in a big way. So take that to heart, everybody who listens to this. There's a lot of truth to what he says here. So now let me bring you chapter 14 of Michael Campy's The Priest to give you an idea again of what the United States and maybe the world beyond could look like if all the economies collapse. This one is, you know, pertaining to the United States. So let's think about this as we go here, how the economy in the United States would look once it collapses. And this serial story is a very good example. So again, The Priest, formerly known as Bob, chapter 14 by Michael Campy. Traveling man. I wasn't quite sure what to call this entry. One of the drawbacks to trying to keep an end times journal is that you have to keep coming up with titles for the entries, and it's difficult not to get repetitive. I thought about calling it Traveling Man and Kid, but that's pretty lame, or Traveling Man with Child, but that sounds like Traveling Man is pregnant. So it's just going to be Traveling Man, okay? I spent the last week cobbling together a cart of sorts out of bicycle wheels, plywood, and those big Tupperware things that people used to keep in their garages to store all the shit that they couldn't bring themselves to throw away but didn't want around the house anymore. I haven't got any idea how this whole trip thing is going to work yet. There are lots of variables. First is how we're going to get out of here. We can't go back the way I came in because I wrecked the road, and it would take way too much time to figure out a way to way across the chasm than it would be worth. We could go down through the Verde, or the not-so-Verde anymore, Valley and through Sedona, and up Oak Creek Canyon Road to Flagstaff. But that is almost 30 miles with a 3,000-foot elevation gain, and pushing the cart up that would take a long-ass time. I wish I had a dog or a horse or a donkey, but I haven't seen anything like that in a long time. They're either all dead or gone to greener pastures. I could hitch the kid up to the cart and make him pull it, but that would be kind of like child abuse. I wonder, though, if things that constitute child abuse have a wider range of acceptable options in the apocalypse than they did before. I mean, there are things that would be flat out frowned upon before that might not be quite so bad now. That's a question for a different time. I could go south and then across, but that would take us out of the way by over 1,000 miles, and I'm not sure if we had that kind of time. So the route is one variable. Another one, and this is big, is what's happened out there in the time we've been here. I'm convinced that it didn't settle into a post-apocalypse egalitarian paradise with happy little clans roaming around or setting up villages and smiling cherubic kids playing in the fields while the parents pick fresh produce from happy little gardens. Most likely deteriorated into a Mad Max hellscape, and most of the people left killed each other off or died from exposure or some weird disease. I don't think humans ever had the capacity for a happy, peaceful existence, especially not the civilized ones. They were so wrapped up in me, 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 that the idea of cooperation was as about as foreign to them as foie gras. As I was planning this trip, I really tried to think of some good things or think some happy thoughts, but it just didn't work. There was nothing to look forward to out there. I started to get a little nervous as it got closer to the time we would leave. I used to think that if something like an apocalypse happened, that I would just hunker down and stay in one place until I couldn't anymore and then die. I hadn't factored in how hard it would be to just die. For one thing, it's not easy, and unless you plan it out, it can hurt a lot. And I didn't really want to die, no matter how much I told myself I would. So I guess we're moving to the beach. There are worse places to go, and I like the beach. I'm sure the kid will like the beach, because what kid doesn't like the beach? I figured it would take us a couple of months to get to where we were going, which meant we would need at least enough food for that length of time. I found some freeze-dried stuff that would probably be better than cans of food because of the weight. One of the things that I wish I had found was a gun and bullets, but there were none. Either the people who live here took them with them, or someone other than me had been here and gathered them all up, or I just didn't look hard enough in the places where people kept guns. Maybe the worst nightmare of the batshit crazy contingent had come true, and the government came, shot them all, and pried the guns from their cold, dead hands. I wonder how that lot was doing. This was a kind of fantasy of theirs, so maybe they did okay. Or maybe when the actual apocalypse came, they just freaked out because a real apocalypse is a lot different from the one they imagined. I hoped that I would run into some of them just to see what became of them. I would like to run into representatives of all the little groups to see how they fared. I might find some hippies or New Age types still hanging around Sedona, so I could check that off the bucket list. I should make a list of all the different types of people that I wanted to see and make little notes on their current condition. It would be an anthropological guide to personality types pre- and post-apocalypse. I might even become an expert on the subject and get invited to tour and lecture. I know, there he goes again. Sometimes I just can't help myself. I'm a victim of my own imagination, and I often fall on the sword of my intellectual ambition. An intellectual ambition bit was something that a professor of mine wrote when I asked him for a letter of recommendation. What a cunt. Don't say the C word. I wonder if that's still a thing. Maybe words that were gender-specific in the old days had become neutral in the new world. I thought that would happen at some point before the collapse, but it didn't. It's time to rewrite the bad word dictionary. There were so many of them that you couldn't say before that were good words with a bad rap. Fuck. I hate it when this happens. I just go off on a tangent, and before I know it, I'm in some weird headspace, and I haven't got shit done. Focus, focus, focus. For some reason, even though there are a lot of distractions now, it is hard as ever for me to stay focused. I have a recalcitrant brain. It's like having bad upstairs neighbors who never sleep, and I'm the landlord, so there's no one to complain to. It's time to get the kid up and hit the road. So as I said, it's all I have for you this week. And as I mentioned, this is an ongoing series. He's got like lots more chapters coming. And I, to be honest with you, I haven't read them. I read them just before I put the show on every week, so I know as much about what's coming as you do. But I strongly urge everybody that's out there listening to this to have a conscience about who you're going to vote for here in a couple of weeks here in the United States, because who you vote for is going to determine, you know, very obviously the future of the United States. But think about what we're getting for all of our support. And as the article mentions, the Medium article that I read to you, they owe us. We don't owe them a thing. They work for us. And I've said this numerous times. All of these politicians, all of these corrupt politicians that we vote in, They're supposed to be working for us, not the other way around. And I'd really like to see that go back, this country here in the United States, go back to we the people, for the people, of the people, instead of the other way around. So I will leave you with that thought, and I'll be back again next week with, I'm not real sure what, but who knows. I'll try to keep it going for you here. So until next week, slantcha. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll return again for another episode of the Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.